It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture. Where America shops for furniture.
This case is about a wife and a mother who found herself in perhaps a failing marriage, a business in trouble.
What's your first name?
And took, some could argue, an easy way out.
I think she really wanted to improve her life and be free and be rich and have this facade of being the successful person that she wanted to be.
My name is Eric.
My name is Laura, and we served as jurors in the Corey Richens trial.
Please have a seat.
Corey Richens didn't seem to me like someone with a very strong moral compass.
Eric Richens was found dead in his home on March 4th, 2022. Eric was married to Corey Richens, and they had three children.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
My husband's not breathing. He's cold. I just came in the bed, in our bed, and I turned over, and he's just cold. He's just cold.
So what happened today?
It didn't.
The family had been alerted by Eric that if something happened to him, to look at Corey. It was almost like they knew something like this could happen someday.
This was in the months leading up to his death.
Right.
He felt that his life could be at risk.
Right. They suspected Corey would take part in his death before it happened.
The state alleged that Corey Richens killed her husband, Eric, by giving him a lethal dose of fentanyl.
A Summit County woman who wrote a children's book about coping with grief following her husband's death, now accused of being the one that actually killed him.
The book was to honor him, to express to these boys to remember their father.
She's accused essentially murdering the person who is the topic of the book. Words of wisdom. Do not write books while you're being investigated.
As we were preparing for trial,
Corey was 100% pure goodness and kindness. She's a good, good human being.
She might have had these good sides to her where she was giving, but she was willing to give that part up.
Did Corey Richens ever ask you to purchase for her illicit drugs?
Yes.
Based upon the testimony and the evidence we saw against Corey, I came to see her as pretty cold and pretty calculating.
You have to understand that the jurors did not know her. They didn't know her.
There was no smoking gun in this case. There was never one thing in this case that was absolutely Corey did it and there's no question.
She basically sacrificed her husband to get what she wanted.
My sweet baby boys. And as much as you've been influenced into thinking that Dad was murdered, that I took your dad from you, that is completely wrong and an absolute lie.
Corey did not just kill Eric. She attempted to kill the spirit of everyone who loved him. She lied to his children. She lied to the world and has shown no remorse while dancing on his grave for profit.
Reports, Corey Richens, behind the facade.
The evidence will prove that Corey Richens murdered Eric for his money and to get a fresh start at life.
In February of 2026, in a packed courtroom in Summit County, Utah, Chief Prosecutor Brad Bloodworth laid out the state's case against Corey Richens, for the murder of Eric Richens, her husband and father of their three sons. It had been nearly 4 years since Eric died on March 4th, 2022, of a lethal dose of fentanyl, served to him by Corey in a cocktail, say prosecutors. She had spent almost 3 years in jail awaiting trial.
More than anything, she wanted his money to perpetuate her facade of privilege, affluence, and success.
Eric Richens owned a lucrative contracting business, and Corey worked as a real estate agent, buying and flipping houses. She was facing not just murder charges, but also insurance fraud and forgery counts.
She was absolutely convinced that she would be found not guilty.
Greg Hall is a friend and former colleague of Corey's.
What made her so convinced of that outcome?
Because she knows that she didn't do it.
Initially, authorities thought Eric may have died from an accidental drug overdose. But as investigators dug deeper, they concluded that Corey poisoned Eric for financial gain.
Watch out for Corey. Watch out if something happens to me.
According to Greg Skordis, a spokesperson for Eric's family, Eric had raised concerns about Corey to his family.
The night Eric died, were they immediately suspecting that Corey took part in his death?
They suspected Corey would take part in his death before it happened. And so when it did happen, it was everyone's worst, you know, nightmare come true.
My husband's not breathing. He's cold.
As the state built its case against Corey Richens, her 911 call saying she found Eric unresponsive in bed was an integral piece of evidence.
If you need to put me on speaker, put me on speaker. I'm going to guide you through CPR, okay?
The prosecution used the recording throughout the trial to call into question whether Corey was even trying to resuscitate Eric.
Start counting out loud so I can count with you, okay?
The operator repeatedly asks the phone to be put on speaker so Corey can listen while performing CPR.
1, 2, 3, 4. Am I on speaker?
Yes.
But a prosecution digital forensic analyst testified that phone receiver sensor activity showed Corey was actually holding the phone to her ear during the call.
There's a proximity sensor inside the device that activates the receiver.
The digital download expert could actually see that Corey did not put the phone on speakerphone. She was still holding it up to her ear. That means she wasn't doing compressions, or if she was, she was doing it with one hand.
The 911 call was impactful for jurors Laura and Eric, who requested we not use their last names.
Listening to the call, it didn't seem like there was much effort in the compressions themselves.
The impression these jurors had of her resuscitation attempts didn't match Corey's description of events, which she texted to her friend Chelsea Barney. Prosecutor Bloodworth read the messages to the jury.
His lifeless body on my bedroom floor. I pumped so hard, screaming at him to come back to life, that I needed him.
Some of her text messages to a friend, she said she was screaming and beating on his chest, and the evidence did not show that.
Some of Corey's other actions the day Eric died puzzled the jurors we interviewed, like her behavior on this deputy's body cam footage shown in court.
It was strange. Right after Eric died, Corey was holding her face with her hands.
It certainly looks like she was trying to hide her face and her emotion.
Where are your children now?
Both asleep in that room. Two are awake with their ear to the door.
And when the jurors compared Corey's behavior in the footage to Eric's sister's, they found the contrast startling.
Eric's sister, Katie Richens, came in. She was hysterical.
Take a deep breath.
Near hyperventilating. And her first thought was, where are the kids? Are the kids okay? And through that whole video, Corey said, my kids are in that room and one of them's listening, but never did she move to go comfort those kids.
Eric's sister, Katie, testified about arriving at the house.
On the morning that Eric died, did Corey Richens say anything about the house that they were living in?
Yes, she told me she was going to sell it.
According to Katie, just hours after Eric's death, Corey was talking real estate, how she planned to sell their home and how she needed to close on a house she had just purchased, known as the Midway Mansion.
I had just lost one of the most important people in my whole entire life. And she was planning on selling the house that he had just been wheeled out of, closing on a multi-million dollar mansion. I could not wrap my head around it.
Prosecutors also presented evidence of something accessed on Corey's cell phone that morning. These gifts seemingly celebrating coming into money.
I thought the gifts were really odd. If she was the one that pulled them up, which it certainly seems like that is the case, that's just more evidence of her state of mind at the time.
It was not clear to the jurors whether the gifts were celebrating Eric's death or celebrating the Midway Mansion purchase. Either way, they found the timing curious.
Still inappropriate the day after her husband passed away that she's accessing these. So it was strange.
Strange behavior aside, the state's case hinged on proving Corey intentionally poisoned Eric, that he did not die of an accidental overdose. The prosecution contends it was Corey who administered the fentanyl, either in a cocktail called a Moscow Mule or in a lemon drop shot that she prepared for Eric. Investigators found this note in a kitchen cabinet, which the prosecution says chronicles how Corey killed Eric.
Notice that here she writes, drink in bed.
And the prosecutor told the jury about something else authorities found unusual. In this incident report, describing what happened that night, Corey immediately writes about having a drink around 9:15 p.m. to celebrate work.
Her story that night that she wrote started with Eric drinking a drink that she made. Why would her story start then? Why wouldn't it start when she walked in the door and found that he wasn't moving? That was just one of these really subtle things that I thought was really important.
Also important for jurors was knowing how Corey obtained the fentanyl. For that, prosecutors turned to a witness who became a controversial figure in the case, Corey's housekeeper.
Did you ask Corey Richens about Eric's death?
Yes, I did.
What did you ask her?
I said, please tell me these pills were not for him.
Wellness routines often fail for one simple reason, and I can speak from personal experience here. They're too complicated to stick with. Too many bottles, powders, and steps usually means they get skipped when life gets busy. Grunes is designed to simplify that. Grunes is a convenient, comprehensive formula in one delicious daily pack of gummy bears. It combines a multivitamin, green supplement, and prebiotic into one complete daily serving. Each serving comes as a daily pack of gummies because you can't fit this level of nutrition into just one gummy. It's formulated with intention, vitamins at 100% daily value and minerals around 25% to support balanced daily nutrition. It also includes 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is 3 times the amount found in leading greens powders, and more than 2 cups of broccoli. Grunes ingredients are backed by over 35,000 research publications. Grunes is vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free, with no artificial colors or flavors. And it is HSA/FSA eligible. Save up to 52% off with code HOURS at grunes.co. That's code HOURS at GRUNS.co.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom! You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
What, ma'am, is your name?
Carmen Lauber.
Carmen Lauber was Corey and Eric's housekeeper, and she cleaned homes for Corey's real estate flipping business. Prosecutors say Carmen also did something else. She supplied Corey with the drugs used to kill Eric.
Did Corey Richens ever ask you to purchase for her illicit drugs?
Yes.
How many times?
4.
In a lot of ways, she is the key witness.
Sky Lazaro had been Corey Richens' attorney before resigning from the case due to a conflict of interest.
Carmen really was the only person who could tie Corey to obtaining fentanyl.
Carmen testified that in the months preceding Eric's death, Corey asked her to get pain medication for a client, which Carmen did. Then, about 2 weeks before Eric died, Corey made another request for something stronger. Carmen says she reached out to a drug dealer friend and told Corey she could get her fentanyl.
I had texted Corey back and told her that I had a friend that could get them, but they were fentanyl pills.
How did Corey Richens respond?
She said, okay, go ahead and get.
The state contends Corey mixed that fentanyl into the Moscow Mule or lemon drop shot she served Eric. Carmen, though, has an arrest record from drug charges and is not an ideal witness.
She had a history of drug abuse. And although I think she's overcome that, those are who you deal with in criminal cases. They're not always the shiniest people in the world.
The jurors we spoke with were able to look past Carmen's history and found her credible.
I put a lot of weight on Carmen Lauber's testimony. I found it very impactful, very important to the prosecution's case. And her testimony was corroborated with the digital evidence.
The state's digital forensic expert testified about hundreds of text messages between Corey and Carmen that matched Carmen's timeline of when Corey contacted her for drugs. Because the messages had been deleted, investigators could only retrieve dates and times, but not the message's content.
Between the two of them, about 800 text messages.
The prosecution argued throughout the trial that this was not the first time Corey used drugs to try to kill Eric. Investigators learned that 2 weeks before his death on Valentine's Day, Eric became ill after Corey served him what they say was a drug-laced breakfast sandwich.
On Valentine's Day, it was a sandwich. When she murdered him, it was a drink.
As for a motive, prosecutors say Corey needed money. A forensic accountant testified about her money problems.
What was the amount of Corey Richens' liabilities?
Right around $8 million.
She said Corey was in debt for nearly $8 million from her house flipping business, some of it from the recent purchase of that Midway mansion. And Eric, between the contracting business, property, and life insurance, was worth a lot.
On the day that Eric died, his estate was worth over $4 million.
There was also evidence that Corey took out an additional $100,000 life insurance policy on Eric about a month before he died, and that Eric's signature was forged.
Question and known signatures were not authored by the same person.
A forgery, prosecutors say, committed by Corey.
She used her business address for this policy and made herself the beneficiary. And frankly, even as a layperson, looking at the signatures, Eric did not sign that document.
And there may have been another motive for murder. According to the state, Corey wanted a new life with this man, Josh Grossman, a handyman she met through her house flipping business. They had an affair for about 2 years.
I don't know how much the family knew about the fact that she had a paramour. I don't even know how much Eric knew about it. That turned out to be a helpful piece of evidence that was discovered during the investigation.
Josh Grossman testified that after he heard Corey had been arrested for Eric's murder, by which time they had broken up, he reached out to Eric's family.
I was overwhelmed with guilt, sorrow over my wrongdoings, you know, infidelity.
Okay. With respect to Josh Grossman, he seemed like a believable witness. I think we all felt really sorry for him. At times that he was crying.
Josh told investigators about a conversation he had with Corey that now, under the lens of murder, took on new meaning. Josh, who had served with the Army in Iraq, was asked about that conversation.
She asked if I had ever killed anybody.
Did she ask a follow-up question?
Yes. Did she ask me how it made me feel or something along those lines?
The jury was also shown text messages between Corey and Josh.
I mean, you see those text messages back and forth, very lovey. Life is going to be different, I promise. If I was divorced right now and asked you to marry me, you would. I just want to lay on the couch and cuddle you, watch a murder documentary, and snuggle. I mean, you know, I don't know that that gets any closer to the reality of what actually happened in this case.
Yeah, in hindsight, I don't think those were probably well thought out. These coming in the way they did and the timing of them, I think certainly did not help Corey.
Can I get Exhibit 3-1, please?
Something else that did not help Corey was this reservation she booked for a romantic getaway with Josh.
And did you know about a trip planned to the secret St. Martin's Resort?
Yes.
Corey sent Josh the reservation she made before Eric died, with the trip planned for April, a month after Eric's death.
The reservation for that trip was damaging to Corey. To me, that made it look like she had been planning something for a while. And at some point soon, Eric would be out of the picture.
As the investigation proceeded, Corey said the prosecution was worried about being caught. It showed web searches Corey made after Eric's death, including luxury prisons for the rich in America. How long does life insurance companies take to pay? If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on the death certificate as?
Corey's internet searches, questions that were being searched, led me to believe she had a guilty mind.
These searches were done after she was handed a search warrant when they searched the home. It kind of takes the sting out of them. I think it's somewhat understandable.
This is after the fact.
This is after and well after, in fact.
She was looking for information based on what she found out after Eric died.
It was one of the points that Corey's own defense team made as it tried to poke holes in the entire prosecution's case.
You know what you're never going to hear is how that fentanyl got inside of him, because there is zero evidence of that.
Just outside of Salt Lake City, home to famed ski resorts including Park City, is the nearly 10-acre estate that Corey Richens was planning on flipping.
It looks ginormous.
It's massive.
Sky Lazaro told us Corey hoped to walk away with nearly $10 million in profit.
I think this was kind of her dream when she got into this idea of flipping houses, was to be able to do properties like this.
And it was that estate, said Corey Richens' defense attorney, Catherine Nestor, in her opening statement, the couple were toasting the night Eric died.
Eric and Corey Richens were celebrating. They were celebrating because Corey was about to close on the biggest real estate deal that her company had ever done. So they had a lot to celebrate. They also had a wonderful family.
Nestor showed jurors a family photo of Eric and Corey with their three sons, seemingly happy, and spoke about the love they shared for their boys.
And what's more important is that the boys adored their father, and Corey knew that about her sons and about her family.
Nestor asked jurors to consider why Corey would poison Eric, knowing the impact it would have on their three sons.
Now, after you've listened to all the evidence in this case, you're going to have to decide if Corey Richens intentionally and knowingly poisoned the father of her kids, knowing that she was going to cause those little boys to feel pain every day for the rest of their life for the loss of their father.
Corey's friend Greg Hall says Corey would never do that.
She was loving, she was kind, she was giving, a wonderful mother.
Eric suffered from pain, a lot.
Nestor told jurors Eric Richens lived with chronic pain.
He suffered from knee and back pain related to his work. He did hard work.
And used drugs recreationally, often taking marijuana gummies.
These are all gummies that the police found in Eric's things.
Nestor said Eric also used pain medication.
You're also going to hear that there was an empty pill bottle right next to him.
The label on that pill bottle was for the painkiller hydrocodone, and it had expired in 2020. Nestor suggested it was Eric who may have come into contact with fentanyl.
You're going to hear that just a few weeks before Eric died, guess where he was? Mexico. Guess where the fentanyl comes into this country from? Mexico.
One by one,
we'll proceed with cross-examination of Ms. Richens Benson.
The defense challenged the state's witnesses, beginning with Eric's sister, Katie, and her account of Corey's behavior the night Eric died.
And you also said that she just stood there and did not comfort you in any way? Not that I recall. Okay, Your Honor, we'd like to play a clip. This is State's Exhibit 1-4. Okay, so that's Corey. Freeze it right there. And that's her squatting down to comfort you while you're on the ground, and that's y'all hugging, right?
Correct.
So your memory about that was clearly wrong.
To be fair, it was 4 years ago.
Okay.
When it came to the state's key witness, Carmen Lauber.
Good afternoon, Ms. Lauber.
Good afternoon.
The defense pointed out that she made a deal with police in order to stay out of prison. Defense attorney Wendy Lewis played a portion of one of Carmen's interviews with investigators.
They're looking to pull your drug court deal and ask for 7 years on your two firsts. The only exception to that and the only thing that they're willing to kind of help you out with is if you can help us out with this.
And by help, he means like give us the details that will ensure Corey gets convicted of murder.
So that's what they said to you?
Yes.
You may be getting 7 years in prison on your state case.
Correct.
But if you help them out, that's not going to happen.
Correct.
The investigators keep pushing on her. We need more. That's not enough. And finally, in the last interview, they basically just spell it out.
I love Eric. It was done intentionally. He did not deserve it.
We believe you, and that's why we're here working on what your get-out-of-jail-free card looks like.
You know, it's, this is your one get-out-of-jail-free card. You have to basically say it's fentanyl.
And you are willing to do whatever it takes to save yourself from getting kicked out of drug court and going to prison, correct?
I'm willing to go forward with the truth, yes.
I think the defense was really hammering her, and I don't think it went over that well.
She said, okay, go ahead and get the fentanyl.
That's your testimony today?
When I told her what I had, that's what she said, yes.
Even if Carmen bought fentanyl for Corey, the defense said there was no proof that Corey used the drug to poison her husband. Catherine Nestor told the jury the cups Corey served the drinks in were never tested that night.
Nanny ended up putting them in the dishwasher the next morning.
I think the most powerful point the defense made is that we don't know exactly how the fentanyl got into Eric Richens' stomach.
When you have to prove murder, you have to prove that she's the one that administered the fentanyl to him.
The defense pushed back on the state's claim that Corey had tried to poison Eric weeks earlier with that Valentine's Day sandwich. Corey's friend Allie Staking said the couple downplayed that episode as Eric having an allergic reaction.
He took a bite of the sandwich and got an allergic reaction and had to shoot himself with an EpiPen.
Was everyone laughing?
Yes, we were all laughing, and we jokingly said, don't eat what Corey feeds you.
Okay. And did Eric appear upset about what had happened prior with the sandwich?
No.
And as for the financial motive that Corey was broke, Sky Lazaro says Corey Richens' multi-million dollar debt was typical in the house flipping business.
That's what they do for a living, is they invest in homes to flip.
So you're saying it's part of the business.
Right.
You get in debt, and then you flip the house, you sell it, and then you make your money back.
Absolutely.
And that $100,000 life insurance policy the state claimed wasn't signed by Eric? Nestor said there is an innocent explanation.
Now I'm telling you right now, wives everywhere sign their husband's names on a lot of things. You've got to find that she did it without his knowledge, and I don't know how they're going to prove that.
The defense also downplayed Corey's affair with Josh Grossman, who testified they never went on that romantic getaway Corey had booked for them.
Then Corey ended the relationship, correct?
Right.
It was a little bit difficult to understand what the situation was with Josh Grossman, because she did seem to drop him pretty quickly.
Do you think that Josh Grossman's relationship with Corey had anything to do with Eric's death?
No. If that were the case, after Eric passed away, that relationship would have continued, not been tapered off. It doesn't make any logical sense.
On March 12th, 2026, after 3 weeks and 40 witnesses from the state,
Your Honor, the state rests its case.
The jurors say they were expecting to see defense evidence and hear from their witnesses.
Okay, now we can hear the rest of the story.
But what happened next?
Who's defense counsel's first witness?
Caught everyone off guard.
My mouth just dropped open. I was just like, what? I was so shocked, and I was actually really disappointed.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
State's counsel and defense counsel are present. Ms. Richens is present.
13 days into the trial, Judge Richard Mrazek asked Corey Richens' defense team about their first witness.
I was totally prepared for however many days or weeks of vigorous defense.
Who's defense counsel's first witness?
Can we have just a minute?
Yeah.
We have a couple of options.
Understood.
But the option defense attorneys Wendy Lewis and Catherine Nestor chose was one these jurors were not expecting.
Your Honor, actually at this time, the defense intends to rest.
I was like, seriously? Now we've seen just about everything in this trial.
I was disappointed because I'm like, you know, I felt like there was more to the story, and they denied us access to that.
I just want to make sure you've consulted with your client about this.
Absolutely.
Ms. Richens, may I ask you two direct questions?
Yes.
Do you understand that you have the right to testify at trial?
Yes, I do.
Are you following your attorney's advice and waiving your right to testify at trial?
Yes, I am.
I accept your waiver. I find it's knowing and voluntary.
Laura says she at least expected the defense to present testimony about Eric's alleged drug use and what role, if any, it played in his death.
They were just hinting ever so slightly at these things without backing it up. So I was really hoping for some testimony. If that's really true, or are you just trying to confuse everything?
Greg Skordis, who happens to be an attorney himself, says perhaps the defense saw no need to call witnesses because it felt there was enough reasonable doubt.
If you think you're winning after the prosecution puts on its case, then there's no reason to put on a case because you could only hurt yourself. So why even risk putting on a witness that could hurt you?
Laura says throughout the trial, she would sometimes look over at the defense table.
There was really no vibe coming from her. Like, I couldn't sense whether she was upset or angry or sad. She had a very flat effect.
Was that part of it, the likability of Corey Richens at that point? Do you think they saw a woman who was having an affair, who was in debt?
I think that's how it certainly could be taken. There never was a real opportunity to humanize her, to make her likable, to make her seem like a person who wouldn't do that.
Mr. Bloodworth, would you like to proceed?
In its closing, the prosecution portrayed Corey Richens as a ruthless social climber chasing a life beyond what she had at her family's expense.
Behind the facade, however, Corey Richens was incompetent. Her business was imploding. All the while, Corey Richens was more interested in spending time with Josh Grossman than Eric. But she did not have the money to leave Eric or the money to salvage her business. She is a risk taker. There was a way forward. Eric had to die.
The defense used its closing argument to lay out its entire case.
They want you to look at a woman in the worst moment of her life.
Citing several reasons why there was reasonable doubt.
The investigation in this matter was nothing but sloppy. It was driven by bias.
Wendy Lewis told jurors the investigators developed tunnel vision early on, driven by Eric's family's belief that Corey was guilty.
Everything about this investigation was led by the Richens family.
It did give me pause whether there was this bias in the entire investigation that started with the Richens family.
What else do we find on that first day that Eric died?
Lewis pointed to that trip Eric took to Mexico shortly before his death and that empty pill bottle on his nightstand.
The hydrocodone bottle. What was kept in that bottle? What might be the best way to bring illegal pills back from Mexico? But then a prescription bottle? So what's another explanation? What could have happened? Maybe he thought it was something else, and he accidentally got fentanyl. Maybe had they tested that bottle, we would know. But they didn't.
She urged the jurors to stand with Corey Richens.
Corey Richens did not kill Eric Richens. The state did not prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt, and you have the courage to tell them this and find Corey Richens not guilty.
How was Corey feeling? Did she ever feel like this may not go her way?
No, absolutely not. Honestly, not at all. She was upbeat, hopeful, enthused. She was absolutely convinced that she would be found not guilty.
After sitting through the three-week trial, jurors Eric and Laura had no way of knowing what other jurors were thinking, nor how long reaching a verdict could take.
I was thinking this is going to be a very long week.
But in the end, deliberations would only last about 3 hours. Laura, one of the two women on the 8-person jury, was selected as 4-person.
When we got back there, I think everyone was bursting. I felt like I was bursting at the seams.
For the jurors, Corey's money trouble proved to be a motive for Eric's murder.
She was in such a position that she had to take drastic action to dig out of the financial hole that she was in. I shared that I thought the evidence was devastating against Corey and that she was guilty. I think that opened the door to other people to share exactly where they stood.
And when the decision was made to vote, the rest of the jury agreed not just that Corey murdered Eric, but that she previously attempted to kill him with that poison-laced Valentine's Day sandwich, and that she committed 2 counts of insurance fraud and forgery.
Ms. Richens, please stand.
On March 16, 2026, Judge Richard Mrazek read the verdict.
Count 1. Aggravated murder. We, the jury, unanimously find that the defendant, Corey Richens, is guilty of aggravated murder.
Corey Richens was stunned as she learned she was found guilty of all 5 counts related to Eric's death, says her friend Greg Hall.
Totally unexpected. She was absolutely crushed and heartbroken.
Corey Richens declined our request for an interview.
State of Utah versus Corey Richens.
2 months later, on what would have been Eric Richens' 44th birthday, Corey Richens, now wearing a prison uniform, was back in court to receive her sentence. Eric's family gave heartfelt statements. His sister Amy emphasized the impact his loss has had on his 3 sons.
This crime didn't just happen once. It happens every single morning when those boys wake up and realize their father is still gone.
The boys were 5, 7, and 9 when their world was shattered. Today they are 9, 11, and 13. And through written statements read by each of their counselors, for the first time, the world got to hear from them. The first statement read aloud was written by the youngest, Weston.
When someone talks about Corey, it makes me feel hateful and ashamed. She took away my dad. It's made me have a hard time trusting people.
The middle child, Ashton, called Corey greedy and said she did not properly care for him and his brothers.
When we got hurt, you didn't even care.
He accused her of harming the family pets.
You wouldn't let me put my kitten in the garage for safety at night, and we found it eaten by raccoons the next day. You wouldn't let us turn on and use the heater lamp for the chickens and bunnies, and they froze to death.
Carter, the oldest, said Corey was often drunk and would lock him in his room.
This happened pretty much daily. I feel angry that she locked me in my room. I miss my dad, but I do not miss how my life used to be. I don't miss Corey, I will tell you that.
All three boys asked the judge to give their mother, whom they only referred to as Corey, the harshest possible sentence.
What she did is very sick.
When it was their turn, Corey's friends and family pleaded for leniency. Her brother Ronnie.
The injustice that's occurred here in this courtroom, it'll be righted in time. Until then, little sister, just know that I'm right by your side and I'll always be right here for you. I love you.
Then Corey Richens was allowed to speak. She did not testify at trial, but now she approached the podium and used her time to address her kids.
I will use any opportunity I can to get a message to you.
She says she has been cut off from them for the past 2 years.
As much as you've been influenced into thinking that Dad was murdered, that I took your dad from you, that is completely wrong and an absolute lie. And just because someone may not be perfect, that's a far reach for them to be capable of murder.
Judge Mrazek had two options when considering Corey Richens' sentence, either 25 years to life with the possibility of parole or life in prison without parole. And he made it known he carefully considered each.
The court's duty is to make a decision, a weighty, long-lasting decision based on the best information available today. Accordingly, Ms. Richens, the court hereby sentences you to life without parole.
For Eric's family, it was the end to a years-long nightmare. Greg Scordis, the family spokesperson, says the true heartbreak is for the kids, who are now living with Eric's sister, Katie.
I can't think of anything worse as a child to lose your father, except to know that it was because of your mother. I mean, think about that.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.